So at the age of 12, someone in my family passed. And instead of being sad about her, I was sad about myself because I realized that I'm not immortal. And at that time, I decided to dedicate my life to try to understand why do we die? How can we live longer, better? How can we delay the onset of aging-related diseases? How long do you live before you get a very serious disease? When you are younger and still healthy, try to maintain your body in the best shape ever. You have a better chance to get the serious diseases all those possible. So basically, you can increase your health span. Testosterone can be low if you are not exercising enough, if you are too heavy, if you are not moving enough, if you are stressful. But it can also be low when you exercise too much.
Gil, it's good to see you. I'm excited to do this conversation together. In 2009... you launched Insight Tracker, which is today one of the top longevity platforms in the world and data analytics in this space. So wanted to have a discussion with you, see the story, how you started, and for more entrepreneurs to learn over time from your experience. So why don't we start from that? What gave you the idea in 2009 to begin Insight Tracker?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And by the way, thank you for inviting me. So I should go much more backward in order to explain it. So at the age of 12, someone in my family passed. And instead of being sad about her, I was sad about myself because I realized that I'm not immortal. And at that time, I decided to dedicate my life to try to understand why do we die? How can we live longer, better? How can we delay the onset of aging-related diseases? And that's why I decided to study biology, originally from Israel. So I did my under at Tel Aviv University, master and PhD at the Weizmann Institute of Science, all in biology. And then I moved to MIT and joined one of the best labs that studied aging, the lab of Len Guerrente, and studied aging there for around 5 years. During the time that I moved to MIT, to Cambridge, to Kendall Square, I started to be exposed to the biotech, pharmaceutical, high-tech environment of Kendall Square. So it's very similar to San Francisco in a way. You have a lot of startup in a radius of 1 mile around the MIT. And I started to realize that I can contribute more to humanity if I will start my own company than being a professor in academia. So I moved to the industry, joined a computational biology, system biology company. Today, we'll call it a machine learning AI company. At that time, we didn't know that you can call it like that. So I worked at that company for a couple of years. And they developed a platform, a very nice platform that you can use a lot of data, and the platform will provide to you some network analysis of gene changes, protein changes, and so on. So during the work there, I said, okay, there is a phenomenon called caloric restriction, that when you cut the amount of calories that you feed the model organism, if you cut it by around 50%, the model organism can live 50% longer. But nobody understood why it's happening. So I said, okay, let's use all of this data, use this platform, and try to understand what's happening under the hood of caloric restriction. So I built a model for that. And the model showed me around 18 different processes that are actually changing when you caloric restrict a mice or a rat. But as a good scientist, or awfully a good scientist, I used a few controls, and one of the controls was using mice that were treated by resveratrol. And resveratrol is a small molecule that David Sinclair found that can be activator of CLT1, which is a longevity gene that I used to work on at MIT. I also used another control that is basically old mice, and basically tried to see what is the overlap between caloric restriction mice, then resveratrol-treated mice, then to mice that basically were old. And to my surprise, the overlap between either a resveratrol-treated mice or old mice with caloric restricted mice was only around 10%. And each of them were a different 10%. So at that time, I tried to analyze this data, and I spent some time with a couple of other scientists. And we came to the idea that if the best caloric restriction mimetic, at that time it was resveratrol, will only cover 10%, the second best will cover 5%, and the next one maybe 2%. So we need a lot of small molecules. And and then we said, why should we use a small molecule? Why can we use the food as a drug of choice? And why can't we basically suggest to a specific person the right food that is right for him or her? But then we said, okay, how can we know? How can we know what a specific person needs? And we said, we need biomarker. And biomarker is basically a biological entity that can mark a specific situation. So for example, glucose in the blood is a biomarker. A resting heart rate is a biomarker. It's a physiological marker. A specific DNA score is another biomarker. It's more like genetic biomarker. So we said, let's start with blood biomarkers because blood biomarkers are very important. Blood is something that the medical community used for the last 100 years or so. They are using it to make a decision, a medical decision, whether you are sick or healthy, what is the kind of treatment that you will receive. So we said, let's use the best kind of marker that we can. What we have done then, we looked at the Quest Diagnostic Catalog. Quest Diagnostic is the biggest diagnostic company in the U.S. And when I looked at it, I've seen that there are like around 5,000 different blood biomarkers that they're testing. And the response was, first, you will need a lot of blood for that. And second, you might not have enough money in your pocket to test all of that because that will be very expensive. So we worked on the criteria to select the right biomarkers that basically helping that will make some a good recommendation for users. So we came with a few criteria. One of them is the biomarker of health and not a disease. So I don't want to look at biomarker related to cancer, but I would like to look at biomarkers related to metabolism, biomarker related to inflammation, performance, and so on. The second one are biomarker that you can modulate using a simple and natural intervention. So basically food, supplement, exercise, lifestyle changes. And the last one, biomarker that at least 1% of the population are out of the normal range. And based on that, we got a short list. Today, we have around 50 blood biomarkers that we are testing. On top of that, we added some DNA scores. So we have around 50 of those. And we have, I would say, around 20 physiological markers, such as resting heart rate, deep sleep, REM sleep, VO2 max, and so on. So we are looking at all of that together. And based on that, we are trying to provide to you as a user a holistic view of how do you look like from the inside, allowing you to build an action plan based on your goal. Do you want to run faster? Do you want to sleep better? Do you want to live longer? And we have around 12 goals like that. And we extract the 5 best recommendations for you. You follow the recommendation, and then you test again your blood and actually the physio marker. You receive the data all the time. And we are providing to you a follow-up result. And we published a paper in 2018 that showed that our users significantly improved their data. Now we have 100,000 users. And we have a very good data that we are working on publishing that showing that we can significantly improve the blood biomarkers and all of physiological markers of our users from baseline to follow-up. We also, because I'm fascinated by longevity, we develop a biological clock. And biological clock is basically a way for you to know how old you are from the inside. So everyone knows what is his chronological age. But biological age is basically looking from the inside and estimating how old you are. And then you can compare it to your chronological age and know whether you are older or younger than your chronological age. So we develop a biological age based on blood. And also, we have a very good data that show that our users that started with biological age that is higher than the chronological age, and the follow-up tests improve it significantly. So that's basically a short explanation of what Insight Tracker is doing and my background.
Yeah. I'm very interested to understand how did Insight Tracker reach that stage? As in, from what you just described, from the university, you had this idea And then over time, you added all these biomarkers, you added all these products and all these innovations here. But at the beginning, what was the first product that you got out? Was it that people would go and do a simple blood test and you would help them on that? Or what was the very first version of InsightTrack?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So as you said, I came out of university, no MBA, no business experience at all. And and it was like almost 15 years ago. So I went to a lot of potential investors and they basically kicked me out of the office and say, are you crazy? Also,
if what was the reason for that, by the way? What was the reason for them telling you no? Was it that you had a very scientific approach? Was it because you didn't know? Or what do you think?
Yeah, I think that it was that there is no market. I think that we started the company too early, in a way. Today, everyone excited about longevity. I assume that a lot of your listeners are listening to Andrew Huberman podcast and David Sinclair podcast, and there are a lot. Now, everyone understands that longevity is important, but 15 years ago, nobody knew about it other than a few crazy people like me. So I think that that was the point. There is no market for that. But I was stubborn enough to not taking no as an answer. And I basically went to some people that I knew that basically appreciate me and also have been ahead of the curve. And basically, all of them were angel investors, and I raised a very small amount of money. And then with that money, I started to develop a bare-bones solution of the application. So instead of today, we have 50 biomarkers. The first one had around 10 biomarkers. And they also gave me a very good advice, don't give it for free. So I charge for it around $250 and try to sell it. And some people bought it, some haven't. But
How did you find those first customers?
Yeah, so that's also a good question. So, and again, a good advisor told me, go to marathon expos and triathlete expo, because those are the people that will use it. I went there, and indeed, I got a few of those. I also was lucky that at that time, I got introduced to the Boston Red Sox nutritionist. And I also, a person approached me, which is a coach of a professional team coaches. And he introduced me to some additional pro teams. So we were successful to recruit a few teams and a few professional athletes. And that gave more confidence for investors to invest more. So basically what we have done, every time we climb another layer and basically show another success story, still very small amount. I think that I raised the second pre-seed, I would say, after we had 50 customers. And by the way, we haven't had at that time, we haven't had any algorithm. The algorithm was me and my partner that basically we looked at the data and entered it manually into the platform and showed to the user that that's the recommendation. So that was the sophisticated algorithm that we built. But with time, with raising more money, we started to automate it and build it in a better way that go for today. We have a dual engine that part of it is a sophisticated expert system. The other one is a IML system that provide to the user a very sophisticated recommendation and very personalized for him or her to live a better longer.
Excellent. So early on, it was you and your partner working on this. Before it evolved to everything that it is today. So then I'm interested to see, when did you realize that you have product market fit, or in a way, when did you realize that you had so many customers asking for the product that you realized, I need to be building this in a much better way?
Yeah. So I think that it took off a while. And actually, before that, like 10 years ago, I hired the CEO. So I'm not the CEO. I'm the founder and chief scientific officer. And the reason for that was that I feel that I'm better and more excited doing the science and the technology and less about the business. I'm doing the business, of course. But I realized that I need to find someone that can help me to do that. So I interviewed a lot of potential CEOs. I think that I interviewed maybe 100. And then I found a guy that his name is Ronnie Salam, that is still current our CEO. So we are working together for 10 years. So I think that that was one of the inflection point, because then he spent more time on the business and started to build the business team and also better in fundraising. So it was easier for us to raise money and so on. But I think that the inflection point happened a few years ago when all of those, let's say, key opinion leaders, such as David Sinclair and Andrew Huberman, started to be at Joe Rogan and other. And I don't know if you know, but David Sinclair is very close to me. He used to be a postdoctoral fellow at the same lab that I used to be at. We are friends. He's an investor in the company, used to be a board member. Now he's running our scientific advisory board. So David Sinclair really liked what we are doing. He spoke about our platform at Joe Rogan a few years ago. And suddenly we have seen that it's like when you go to the casino in Vegas and you put a quarter and suddenly you get, $100. So that's happened one day. And we didn't know what happened. So it took us a few days to understand that David went to Joe Rogan, and then suddenly all the dollars were falling on from the machine. And then when we realized that, we understood that the market started to be ready. So we expanded the team and they have seen, a hockey stick grow since then. So that was the inflection point when David went to Rogan, and then we identified Andrew Huberman very early. So we are also in a good relationship with him and a few other influencers that basically helping us to spread the word.
How did you identify Huberman very early on? How did you know? Like, did you meet him somehow, or what was the process?
Yeah, it wasn't me, by the way. It was one of our marketing team member that basically identified him very early, and basically, I think that from the first episode of Huberman, we have been a sponsor of it. And I think that he's very smart, but also it was a bit of a luck that we, because you're doing a podcast, I'm doing a podcast. Not a lot of podcasts have millions of viewers for each episode. And so it's a bit of a luck and a bit of, smart. And that's how we found it.
That's interesting. What do you think that changed based on those podcasts? Like, they gave a lot of light into the world of longevity, but like did something from the technology change, or is it just the distribution, do you think?
Yeah, definitely what we are doing is we are making the product better based on our users. I assume that a lot of companies are doing it. We are talking with our users and trying to refine it. So part of it is more like, I call it, if you look at product development, I see it as evolution and revolution. So revolution was the beginning of insulin tracker, adding the biological age, what we call an inner age. Now we are adding a platform that you can scan your food for a week and receive a very cool information about that. And some of it is more like evolution. So making the site cleaner, easier to understand, because the biometric data is very complex, and I'm a scientist, I have a PhD, so it's easier for me to understand what is ALT, GGT, and AST. But I assume that for you, it's like Chinese. So we need somehow to explain it in a way that everyone understands and communicate it, and also give the user the so what. So I think that that was more evolution, and I think that it's still an evolution. I don't think that we are in a place that everyone in the world can use insulin tracker, but I really want to go there. So we will continue to refine and make it better.
Yeah. So your goal is to appeal to the general population?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. So if we go there, when we consider biomarkers today, when we consider data, how should, like, from the top down, when someone doesn't understand longevity, how do we need to start thinking about it?
Yeah, so I think that it's we need to go back to the current healthcare system. So the current healthcare system is treating a symptom, okay, or treating a disease. When you or myself will go to our primary care physician and we look okay, they'll say, hey, they will kick you out of the office and say, you are good, come in 2 years. What we are saying, no, we want to focus on prevention. And what is prevention? Let's look at all of your biomarkers, physiological markers, DNA, identify some area, even if that you are good today, that you have some risk. So how are we doing it? For example, for each blood biomarker on top of the normal or out of the normal, we also added an optimal zone. So basically, if I take the example of glucose, the level of blood glucose that is normal for everyone in the world, doesn't matter if you are male or female, athletic, active, or a couch potato, monk, or drinking alcohol like crazy, it's 65 to 99. And what we found based on looking at the peer-reviewed scientific literature and mega databases is that depending on your age and depending on your gender, there is a range that is subsumed by the normal range. We call it optimal, but if you will be there, you have a better chance to live better longer. Why? Because if you have a lower blood glucose than the normal, you have a better chance not to have diabetes, and you have a better chance to have a better metabolism, so a better chance to live better longer. So we develop an optimal range like that to each blood biomarker that we have, and also for physiological markers. And then we are looking at all of them holistically, and coming and telling you, you have an issue with biomarker A, B, C, and D. And based on that, those are the 5 interventions that holistically will help you to optimize the majority of them. Follow those interventions for a while. And then in a few months, test again and let's see if what you optimized, but also what used to be in the past okay, but now it's not okay because we are a very complex machine. Think about it like a car that you take to the technician every 5,000 miles. You take it to the technician, you plug a computer to the car, and then the computer telling the technician exactly what to replace. You replace it, the car is good for another 5,000 miles, but then you come again, you plug the computer again, and maybe you find different issues because the car is used. So it's the same here. We are looking at your blood biomarkers. We find the issue. We are giving you recommendation. Hopefully you fix that. Maybe not all of them. Then we are testing again and looking at the situation right now and trying to fix it again and again and again. And that's what we call prevention. So with a time, we hope that if you do follow the recommendation that we will give you, you'll have a better chance to fill your potential and hopefully live either to 90, 100, or even 122, which is the longest live human in the world reached to that level. So that's the goal, and that's what we are doing at InstaTrack.
Yeah, yeah. So I have 2 questions based on that. The first one is, you mentioned about glucose being 65 to 99. Now, first of all, what's your impression about the CGM devices, if this can help you look at it at all the times? And also, what does it mean to go well beyond that number? Let's say it's 140, or it's let's say it's 30. Like, what does the edges mean?
Yeah, no, it's a very good question. So first of all, glucose is one marker out of a few that related to, let's say, a control of sugar. So you have glucose, which show you, or fasting glucose, which what we are looking at. So basically show you what happened in your glucose level when you wake up. Usually it's a wake up fasting glucose. Then you have a marker called A1C that basically look at a modification on a specific molecule that show you or can simulate the level of your glucose in the last 90 days. So that's the second one. And then you have insulin, which is the hormone that basically regulate the clearance of the glucose from the blood stream into the tissue. So again, you need to look at it holistically. Now, if we are going back to continuous glucose monitoring or CGM, so this is basically a device that you put on your arm and can provide to you for 14 days or so the level of your glucose continuously every 5 minutes. And then based on that, you can make some intervention. This device was developed for diabetic. So basically, when a diabetic see that the glucose is going too high, they can inject insulin. When the glucose is going too low, they can eat something with some carbohydrate to increase the level of the glucose. Now, for normal people like you and me, CGM is an interesting device. And I think that definitely there will be value with it in the future. As of today, there is not enough scientific data to come and say what are the ranges of the glucose during the day, because it could be that your glucose will go to 140 or 150, as you said, but you are a healthy person, it might be okay. We don't know. Nobody looked at it seriously. So what I'm saying, now we are in a phase that where the scientific community and there are a few companies that using those CGM, that are collecting a lot of data, and then based on that data, we can know what is what are the ranges for, I don't know, 25 years old male versus a 46 years old a female, and how it changed during the day, and what in the interaction with the sleep, and the interaction with feeding time, interaction with exercise. All of that is something that currently is under development and under research. So the bottom line is an interesting device, but there are not a lot of knowledge about what does it mean and what are the right interventions for that.
And then I know that you are connecting with wearables as well. What kind of data are you looking from those? Because we spoke about the biomarkers. Now, what about the wearables? There is a lot being said the last few years around HRV, a lot being said around sleep metrics and so on. Which ones from those are you looking at and what are you doing with them?
Yeah, so we are trying to look at all. So we are looking at a sleep data, so basically total sleep, deep sleep, REM sleep, awake time. We are looking at HRV, we are looking at the resting heart rate, VO2 max. We're also looking at the activity. What activity are you doing, the activity time. And then what is nice about that, because we are combining it together, we can use this data to provide to the users some additional insight. And I'll give you a few examples. Let's assume that last night your deep sleep was pretty low, which is not good. Then based on that, we are providing to our user, we call it a pro tip. So we're sending you a text and or a notification and telling you, hey, last night your deep sleep was too low. We know what have you done last night. Let's say you went to sleep too late or you drank alcohol too late or we know that you have a low magnesium in your blood. So based on that, we are providing you a recommendation saying, try this today to prepare to your night and be better. So that's one example. Another example.
So that would be on a daily basis. So for example, you would see my sleep or my HRV and you would tell me go and do magnesium for the next day, for example. This is a daily feedback.
So it can be based on one day, it can be based on 1 week, it can be based on 1 month. And you can also do it as a anomaly detection. So basically look at, let's say, all your history. Let's assume that, let's take a resting heart rate, okay? And say that your resting heart rate, the average resting heart rate, I don't know, it's 55, okay? And suddenly you have one night at the jump to 65. Then we can come and say, hey, there is an anomaly here. Something wrong happened. We assume that it's because of A, B, and C do X, Y, and Z. Okay, so that's an example of anomaly detection. Another thing that we are using the data for the activity tracker is to provide the user a post-exercise pro tip. Let me give you an example. You finish a run. You went to a run in San Francisco or in the gym in the fitness SF. And we know that you went for a run. We know how long you exercised. And then let's say 20 minutes later, you receive a notification. Say, hey, congrats, you finished a run. 45 minutes a run. You went for, I don't know, 5 miles. And based on your run and based on all the information that you know about you, you need to consume this amount of carbohydrate, this amount of protein, and this amount of liquid in order to replenish for the day. Okay, so that's another thing that we are able to provide. We also can combine all of it together and combine it and provide you better recommendation, as we discussed before, based on the blood, DNA, and fitness tracker together and give you a very a specific recommendation, what should you do in order to optimize your body. So we are starting to combine the data together. Another use case of the data from the wearable is we're asking you to build an action plan, okay? Let's say 5 or so intervention. Some of the intervention we can monitor using the fitness tracker. For example, we recommend you to go to a run. So instead of asking you to check in for that, we can automatically check in and say, hey, we have seen that you ran today, or we are telling you that you need to sleep more or less or whatever, so we can come and automatically check you in. So basically, we are trying to make it as seamless as possible because we are a lazy creature and we need to find a way to give you the user value with the less effort from him.
Yeah. Gil, I understand that you're basically, the main goal here is to close the loop and make it as easy as possible for the individual to know exactly what they need to do without them having the education. It doesn't mean that I have to spend 5 years learning by myself about the nutrition. You can tell me and provide me that knowledge. This is the ideal world. But then the next question that comes to mind is, how custom is this? What if someone is a bodybuilder, for example? Or what if someone is a runner or a competitive athlete or someone that just wants to exercise every day? How custom can this be for each individual?
Yeah. So as I said before, the user can set a goal. For example, I'm above 50 years old male, and knowing from the literature, building muscle is very important for someone like me. So I selected the goal of build muscle. And then I receive a very specific recommendation of what should I eat before exercise, before the gym, what should I eat after the gym, what kind of exercise I should do. I can give you an example about that a person, a male above the age of 50, need to have 2x the repeats of a male below 50 to build the same amount of muscle. Because when you get older, it's harder for you to do that.
Yeah. Because of testosterone or something else?
It can be because of testosterone. It's also because we get older, so the efficiency of building muscle is less efficient. If you look at women, for example, they are even in a worse situation. Postmenopausal women, it's almost impossible for them to build muscle. So if any woman, premenopausal women are listening to us, I will strongly recommend you to spend as much as you can time to build muscle before you get to the perimenopause and the menopause, because after that, it's very hard. So that's what we are doing. We are providing to the user an action plan that look at him holistically, but also look at the goal. So for me, it's building muscle. For you, it can be run faster. For someone else, it's de-stress or be less stressful. And again, we are talking to a lot of entrepreneurs here. So stress is a big problem for entrepreneurs. Yep. I know it, you know it. We are 24/7 in the business. So how can you make yourself less stressful? So we'll pepper in recommendation about decreased stress on top of the recommendations that are very personal for you based on your biomarker.
Yeah. And Gil, I also understand that from what you mentioned, the goal is for longevity, for example, is to be within the boundaries for each biomarker. So for example, be in the boundaries of glucose that we mentioned before, 65 to 99, and then also in all of those other biomarkers to be in those boundaries, and you help everybody stay in these boundaries. But then how do we know that this leads to an extension of like living a better life and extending basically the amount of years? How do we know that staying on those boundaries is what's important? Or in other words, like what I'm really wondering, I've seen in other podcasts you are speaking about someone that lived until 122. Like my question is it because they actually stayed in these boundaries, or maybe they had one biomarker that was on the extreme of the distribution?
Yeah, no, that's a very good question. So first of all, the people that the long-lived humans that live above 100. A lot of the reason that they are living longer is their genetics. So they have a very good genetics. And usually you can know if your parents and grandparents live to 100, you have a very good, a higher chance to live to above 100. A lot of them are actually smokers and they've never been in the gym and they ate crap, but they have a very good gene. So they are the let's say the gifted one. They basically lucky. Okay, it's like talking about again, you are in San Francisco, so let's talk about Facebook. I'm not sure that Mark Zuckerberg is so smart. He was lucky. He started the company and he had an idea and it worked well, so he succeeded. Most of us are not Mark Zuckerberg. You said that you have thousands of listeners that are entrepreneurs. I would say maybe there are five Mark Zuckerberg, the rest are not. So those people need to work hard in order to build the company. It's a grinding work that you need to work very hard. So it's the same in the longevity. So you have, the genetic is the card. Again, I'm going back to Vegas. So you get the card in the casino. Now, you might got a bad card, but that doesn't mean that you cannot play the card well. Some people get a very bad card and they play them well. So it's the same here in your health and longevity. You got a bad card, you work harder, and you can make the bad card a better card. And if we look at genetics, the genetics most likely is around, basically explain only around 20% of the longevity points. So even if you have a very bad card, you still have 80% that connected to your lifestyle, nutrition, exercise, sleep, and so on. So you have a lot of building block to play with to live better longer. Now you ask to me, how do we know that the glucose, for example, is so important? We have a lot of data from the peer-reviewed scientific publication. In the example of glucose, you can look at a study called Framingham Heart Study. So it's a study that they've done in a small town in Massachusetts called Framingham. Basically, they tested those people, around 50,000 people, from, I think, the 1970s or something like that, and followed them up again and again and again. And they looked at the level of the glucose of these people from that time, and some of them already died. So they basically looked and what they found, that people that at the age of 40 or 50 had a relatively lower glucose level, still in the normal range, but lower than someone that is a bit higher, still in the normal range, they could live 10 years longer than someone that have a slightly higher, but still in the normal range. Meaning that maintaining the fasting glucose as low as possible is very important, okay? You can see the same with the LDL cholesterol and ApoB and the inflammation marker. So there is a lot of data that show that people that maintain those markers in the good range, they have a better chance to live longer and also spend more less time with the clinician. So I think that is a good time to discuss a term called health span. So we have lifespan, basically, yeah. How long do you live? And we have health span, how long do you live before you get a very serious disease, okay? And if you, when you are younger and still healthy, try to maintain your body in the best shape ever, you have a better chance to get the serious disease as old as possible. So basically, you can increase your health span. Today, if you look at the U.S., the average lifespan is around 79 years, and the health span is 63 years. So basically, we have 16 years on average that we are sick, lying on the bed and connecting to a tube. Now, I don't think that's fun for any of us to be like that. So we are trying basically to push it as far as possible. And when we will be retirees, we'll have a time to play with our grandchilds. We'll have a time to climb a mountain, to ride a bike, to have fun. And that's the idea here. Let's try to invest in our longevity like what we are investing in our retirement with the 401k.
Yeah, I think based on that logic then, what if we consider again the boundaries that we mentioned, we know that hormones decline by age. So for example, what's your opinion in things such as external hormones? So for example, what about testosterone replacement therapies or something like this that would keep basically testosterone in the right levels or the right hormones in the right levels when someone is in their 50s, 60s, 70s?
Yeah, so I think that it's using hormonal therapy is something that I would strongly suggest to do with a clinician. There are, natural ways to increase your testosterone. For example, testosterone can be low if you are not exercising enough, if you are too heavy, if you are not moving enough, if you are stressful. But it can also be low when you are exercised too much. So basically, you need to find the right, the Goldilocks location for the right level of testosterone. I've seen hundreds or thousands of people that came to us with relative low testosterone, and they improve it by those lifestyle changes. Now, you can go to a clinician and have that, but then everything that you get from the outside, there are risks with that. So I will strongly suggest, as the first line of defense, test your testosterone, try to make some lifestyle changes. And if that doesn't work, go to your clinician and do that. But don't do it in a shady clinic somewhere in the basement of Chinatown in San Francisco. Go to a real place and treat your body like it is a for share, not a, I don't know, Kia Rio. Your body is the most important machine that you have.
I have a few more questions. First one is about inner age. A lot of companies come outside explaining about the biological age and all that. Everybody has a different formula. I think you are one of the first in the world that has done something about inner age. So I wanted to hear from you, how did you approach this? How does it work? How is it different than the rest? That's the first question. And the second is going to be a bit of a segue, but I wanted to see if, say that you had, you're growing a child right now, it's your child, and you wanted to make sure that it's going to expand, you're going to make the best you can with your child to expand their life and do all the right things. What are those things that they would follow?
Yeah, okay, so let's start with the inner age. So inner age is a biological clock based on blood biomarkers. It's also an open box, meaning it's not a black box that we are doing a calculation with machine learning and coming and telling you, hey, you are your biological age is 55, you are 50, so you're older. We are giving you explanation of every step. So what we are doing, first we are showing you what is your inner age and what is your chronological age. Then we are showing to you what blood biomarker made you older or younger. And we are even showing how many years each blood biomarker doing it. Then we are showing to you why. And then we are providing to you a very specific recommendation. What should you do in order to optimize this blood biomarker? So basically, from A to Z, you have a lot of control and a lot of understanding what you are doing and why it will be better. The other biological clock, such as epigenetic clock, which are super accurate, they are very accurate, but they are a black box. So we come and tell you, hey, you are 55 and you are 50, and then you don't know, okay, what should I do? Nobody knows. So basically, it's more like information. It's cool. It's interesting, but it's not actionable. So the inner age is very actionable. And again, as I told you before, we have data for around 100,000 people, and we have seen that they can improve it, and also they are looking better and feeling better and all of that. So that's about inner age. Now, the second question about if you have a kid today, a baby, and you want him to optimize him and let him live longer, better, so you need to treat him well. And again, there are I'm looking at it as the 80-20, not only for kids, but also for us as an adult. There are a few logic steps that you should take that you don't need Insta Tracker for that. Insta Tracker is for the people that want to optimize themselves and they live as long as possible and to be the best. But if you are a normal person, there are a few steps that you should know and you should imply for your kids. So sleep the right amount, eat more whole food and not packaged food, don't interstate too much, don't drink a lot of alcohol, and if you drink alcohol, drink it early in the day. Don't be too stressful. Exercise the right amount. So those are the 80%. Then the 20% is do the test of Insta Tracker and we'll tell you exactly what is very specific for you. So that's how I looked at it. And I think that the majority of the population today don't do the 80% yet. So that's why I'm saying Insta Tracker is still not for everyone, because not everyone is doing the simple step that I'm doing. For example, I'm trying religiously to go to sleep at 10 and try to wake up at 6. So if I'm going to the gym, I won't take the class at 5 a.m. at the fitness SF. I will go for the 7 a.m. or 8 a.m. because for me, sleep is the most important part. And now you have some a social event. So Social is also very important. And some entrepreneurs say, oh, I need to work all the day and I'll work all the weekend. No, you need to take a break and go for a walk with your wife or kids or spend time with your friends. That's also important. So I think that the mix of all together will allow you to optimize your body in the best way possible.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, for my last question, what should we expect within the next 5 years for Insight Tracker? What are the new innovations? What things are you bringing out?
Yeah, so we are working on, I'm sure that you know, and I'm sure that a lot of your guests discussed about the generative AI and all of that. So we are using that. For example, we are working on releasing, I call it Health GPT. So we have the Chat GPT, but the problem with the Chat GPT that there is a lot of garbage outside in the internet about what to do for health and performance. And we develop a big database, I think the biggest database in the world, that well-curated data about health and performance from our blogs, from our podcast, from internal document. So we train this Health GPT on that data, and it's provide a very good a recommendation for users to basically query and ask, hey, my glucose is high and my testosterone is low, what should I do? And then you will say, and I'm 25 years old, entrepreneur in San Francisco. So that's one thing. Another thing is, I think that part of the next endeavor is nutrition. We are consuming, around 200 different nutrition decisions in the day. What to eat, when to eat, how much to eat. If you think about, there are 8,000 different food items available for us, and I'm now querying tens or hundreds of people for weeks. So I know that on average they consume only 50 of those. So you consume 50 out of 8,000. So our goal is to understand what you consume. Then from that extract what macro or micronutrient you consume too much or too little. Do you consume enough protein? Do you consume too much saturated fat? Do you consume enough magnesium? And then based on that, providing you some adjustment, how can you adjust it? And what food that you eat today, you should eat more. What food from the outside you should integrate into your diet? Also looking at the intersection between your nutrition, sleep, exercise, and supplementation, and just observing you, giving you some tip. Hey, we observed that on Thursday, you ate dinner at 9:15 and you went to sleep at 10. So it was only 45 minutes gap between your last meal and your sleep, and you should have 2 hours. Yeah. Okay? So intersection between food and sleep, food and exercise, food and supplementation, food and food by itself, and giving you some tips, simple tips that will allow you to optimize yourself and live better longer. So that's another thing that we are doing. We're also looking into integration of a new modality. You mentioned continuous glucose monitoring, but there are a lot of other modalities that you can add. And definitely working more and more with AI and ML to provide the user, because we have so much data that we can provide the user a lot of data, a lot of recommendation and insight that will surprise him or her, but also provide to them a very high value that they can take and hopefully allow them to live a better life.
Awesome. Gil, that's been a very insightful conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.